I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program was brought to you by El Cortez. Stop in for tacos and tiki drinks at 17 Ingraham Street in Bushwick, or visit them online at elcortezbushwick.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Marissa Ross.
And I'm Adam Horvulis, and we're the host of Natural Disasters.
It's a podcast about natural wine and shit. Every week we're going to be going through the basics, the ins and outs, and the culture around natural wine, and, you know, other shit that we just decided that we kind of want to talk about, but mostly wine.
Yeah, I mean, have you had that friend that has showed up to your house with a bottle of wine and gone, "This is natural wine," and you're like, "I wish I knew a little bit more about that," and was entertained?
Or maybe you're the friend that's like, "Yo, this is some natty wine," and you just want to learn more about said natty wine. This could be a good podcast for you too.
Or maybe you know everything about wine and you just want to listen to some really entertaining people drink wine and chit chat.
Yeah, we do a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I went to a Pusha T show recently. That was really fun.
That's pretty amazing.
It was great, except I was really looking for Kanye to come out, and then he didn't. And even though, you know, I'm still a little mad at him, but we don't need to get into that. Anyways, wine and shit.
Yeah, join us, Natural Disasters Pod on Heritage.
Yes, on Heritage Radio Network. It's the best. We're really excited.
All right.
Bye.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Hello and welcome to Snacking Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. On today's episode, we have the founders of Jane's Beard, the premier culinary event that finds the intersection of the queer space and the food world. And live in studio, we have Grim Streaker, whose brand new debut album, No Vision, comes out mid-May. So sit back, relax, and here's another episode of Snacking Tunes.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacking Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. That was just Grim Streaker, their new single, Sensitive Demon, which is out now, and their brand new debut record comes out May 17th. They will be live in studio, a return from when they were here in 2017. But first up, Jane's Beard.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Hello.
Atlanta rhymes with Dana McMillan and Sabrina, not my sister, Chen.
Yes.
How are you two?
Great. How are you?
It's good. It's good to see you two again.
I know. We were just kind of reminiscing sort of like how we met. It's been a little while.
You DM'd me.
We did.
You DM'd me. Which doesn't happen that much. I'm a little bit, you know, above the anyone sliding into my DMs.
We definitely slid into your DMs. Yeah.
We were like, it's a modern love story.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's good to feel young when people contact me that way. But it's really nice to see you two again. Thanks for coming on the show. This is actually my first show back. I will say a shout out to my lovely wife. I've been married for a month now. And a big thank you to Darren and Kong for covering the show while I was off doing the, you know, the big life thing. I want to go back to your childhoods before you two even knew each other. And I know that, Lena, you said that you grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and you did food tours.
Yes.
Right at the burgeoning Richmond scene. What was the scene like, and what is a what was it on the food tour, and what made you a good guide?
So when I graduated college in 2008, and then came back to Richmond for a few years, and my last semester in college I studied abroad. So when I was coming back, I was like, oh, this like really amazing food. I wonder if I can like where are places that
where
I can,
were you?
I studied abroad in Valencia, Spain. So 2 hours south of Barcelona. So it was coming back. There were all of these sort of like new restaurants that were opening up, and I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time in downtown Richmond, which is where sort of like the prominent food scene was happening. And so like as I was starting to work, most of my money, instead of just going to like out to bars and things like that, was just going directly to food. So I would just kind of go out and like, you know, I was like by myself and would just sit up at a bar, and then I started talking to a bartender, and then, you know, and whatnot. And just, they would just show me like, hey, here's this like, you know, amazing dish that we just created. Would you like to kind of check that out? I think food tours were like just starting out in Richmond, and I had gone on maybe like their second tour, and I was like, this is awesome. And I was also like talking with all of the people who were like on the tour, and they were like, you are like introducing people to some of this food as well. Would you like to give a tour? And so I just started giving food tours.
One of the things I always feel that makes a bad food tour is when you go there and you know they're just like, you know, friends with the restaurant owners, and they're just getting kickbacks from the side. How did you ensure that people had like the right Richmond food experience, and what type of dishes were you showcasing when you were doing it?
I mean, I think it was sort of like the restaurants that were like really being talked about that were like starting to win it like their own awards. And then it was the dishes that we just got to choose. So it wasn't necessarily the restaurant saying, oh, here's like the best dish that we think. It was like, hey, these are the dishes that like we want. It would be anything from sort of like Oysters Rockefeller to, it just kind of depended on like the specific restaurant. However, Richmond is about like 10 years or so behind New York, I would say. So the dishes that I would probably say now were, that were like sort of prominent then, were dishes that the New York food scene has had for a while.
If I had to go to Richmond and have one dish right now, where would you send me?
I'd send you to Comfort. And I would say you have to get the like banana bread pudding. It's sort of this like cold, hot banana bread, like banana pudding creme brulee. So it's absolutely perfect. Every time I go back to Richmond, that's the dish that I get.
Not even a hesitation. You didn't even have to think about it. You knew it. You went right there.
Absolutely. I can see it in my mind right now.
And Sabrina, you moved to New York to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
What, were you comfortable where you were, or what is it that New York held for you in your vision to make the decision to come here?
So I lived in D.C. for a long time, and my family's there, lots of friends as well, and I definitely just kind of fell into a routine and felt like I wanted to kind of stretch myself a bit and kind of be a bit more challenged and find new adventures and explore new places, places to eat, meet new people and different types of people, maybe in different fields as well. So New York just made sense to me because I would come up for the weekend all the time and just love it here. So
And growing up, you had your mom and your grandmother cook for you. You didn't really go out to eat mm-hmm. that much. What were some of the dishes that they made for you or some of the childhood favorites?
Yeah, we'd I grew up with like whole steamed fish. Mm. Very simple. Yeah. Also steamed chicken, always rice every night. And lots of soups, actually. Like bone broth was always on the stove every winter. I think it's kind of funny it's a thing now, but I'm like, oh, bone broth, yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah. I can finally get it.
Yeah.
I don't have to make it anymore. I was just at Bel Campo at Hudson Yards yesterday, and they had like four handles, like taps mm-hmm. of different types of bone broth. You can just,
ooh, nice.
Fill yourself. Yeah. Or just stand under and just pour it into your into your face, like a keg stand of bone broth.
That sounds like a dream. Yeah.
Just like a pure dream.
Yeah.
You didn't start to discover going out to eat until after you left. Was that when you moved to New York or was you moved out of home?
Just when I moved out of home. I went to college and it was the first time I was eating actually non-Asian food. And so my sister, who's 2 years younger, we had this conversation where she actually called me once and was like, hey, so I had this cheese the other day called Munster and it's delicious. I was like, oh my gosh, how do you spell that? I'm going to try it.
Go to the cheese store, like, do you have... Yeah. You probably don't.
Yeah.
But do you have Munster cheese?
Yeah.
Yes. What type? Oh my gosh. Right out the store.
Question. Yeah.
Wasn't prepared for that. Thought it was just one.
I'll be back.
It's called cheddar. Am I saying that right? So you both moved to New York mm-hmm. as you call the East Coast gay Mecca. What were your aspirations here and what did you expect to find in the city? And how did it possibly let you down?
Yeah, I guess it's such a big city, right? And so I guess I figured we wouldn't have to look so hard for our queer community. Everyone's just like sitting at a cafe or you just bump into them, in the subway,
Like every scene from like The L Word would like sort of, kind of play out. We thought that that's what would happen here in New York, essentially.
Yeah, you walk into cafes and everyone's gay and you're like, oh,
yeah,
this is just life.
Yeah, and that didn't quite happen.
No. Did it kind of not quite happen or just didn't happen at all? Like you maybe met someone or was hard to enter into their group or you just couldn't find the community?
We found a community. I mean, like through, we met up playing on a gay sports team together and found definitely like good friends there and, just going out to parties and happy hours and things like that. But in terms of finding that community who also loves food, it wasn't necessarily an easy thing to find.
And what did you think it was? Just that there wasn't a meeting space or that people weren't just attracted to it or it's just something that was relatively still new?
Yeah, I would say it's just that opportunity to get into that conversation, really. So sometimes if you're at a club or something or a bar or some environment where you can't really get in deep conversation, necessarily talk about food... maybe it wouldn't make sense in the environment, then we just wouldn't find that common ground. Maybe the person there, there were people there, but it was just hard to find that intimate space.
Yeah, never, Sabrina said, like, food never just came up as a talking point. If you're at, a bar, you're kind of, dancing along to the music a little bit and not really like, oh, what's the latest, dish that you've tried at XYZ restaurant?
You're like, what's up about creme brulee?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I love this song. Just kidding. Ha, yeah. Ha, ha. Just kidding.
Back to the sidestep.
Yeah. Shots, anyone?
Yeah. Shots. Yeah. Tequila. Everything's, blur now.
So when did the idea for Jane's Beard begin to happen? Oh, and what sport were you playing when you met?
Soccer.
Soccer, yeah.
Oh, okay. Positions?
Forward.
Anywhere they would put me.
Good
excellent
answer.
Passer.
Same. Similar answer.
Yeah.
And it was usually the bench. So when did you begin to have the idea for Jane's Beard? And obviously the impetus was you not finding the community, but how did it begin to take shape?
So I was working for a food technology company kind of at the time of Jane's Beard. And was kind of finding myself more in like the operations side. And I was really craving kind of getting back into sort of like the restaurant scene. I hadn't really checked out restaurants in the way that I knew them back in Richmond. And Sabrina and I were kind of talking casually after a game. And one day she just said to me, you know, what's kind of annoying. It's really hard to find somebody who's not your girlfriend or partner to do a 3-hour tasting menu with you. And immediately I was like, I'll do that. Like, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and then that really surprised me that she was up game for something like that. So we just started talking about food, and we were like, where are other queer women who love to nerd out over food as well?
And sort of like a 3 or so month process about, you know, where is that space? Are there already kind of supper clubs or communities out there? And we couldn't really find what we were looking for.
Did you find that that space existed in the hetero straight world and it just wasn't transferring to the queer world, or you just couldn't find it in general? Or that you wanted to make sure that there was a place for the queer community versus conforming to a more heteronormative dining club?
I mean, we did some research, and there are definitely lots of supper clubs out there. It's not a new idea or anything. So pretty cool things going on. And then there's a lot of food festivals, too. But those aren't necessarily, they're just general spaces, you know? So I would still go to those food festivals or barbecue, whatever, you know? But there was no specific place that kind of was that intersection of color and queer.
It was really the space that we were looking for was about connecting to. Sabrina and I are, we go to a lot of networking events in general, and we couldn't find, like, the way that we like to connect with people is over a meal. I mean, that's how we connected with you, right? Yeah. And so we couldn't find that space that allowed us to connect with the community over a shared meal.
Where did the name come from?
You should have seen the... We were struggling with the name, actually. Yeah.
I think there's a Google document with all the names that we did not choose.
They were like bad pride name parties. things were inappropriately named. Cherry and Box and I don't know. Yeah. I think, Elaine, you started saying, you know, what's up with James Beard?
Yeah.
And we started looking and reading about James Beard. And he was actually a gay man. And we were surprised to learn that. So... We just thought it would be funny to say, well, how about an homage to James Beard, and we call it Jane's Beard. So that's kind of, and it made sense. And then to play on the word gay beard. So
we're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to talk about the first one and then how it's evolved. We're going to play a quick song from the archives. Grim Streaker, who was here in 2017, will be here live in studio here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. welcome back. You have the name, you have the desire for connection, you want to nerd out over food, and you want someone who's not your girlfriend or your partner to have a three-hour tasting menu. All the elements are there. What was the first event like?
A blur.
Yeah.
Correct answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really stressful because we really didn't know what we were doing. Somehow we pulled it off. We had a friend referred us to someone they knew that was a chef, Chef Hannah Wong, actually, who's now the executive chef at Venda. And we talked to her about doing this dinner party, and she goes, yeah, let's do it. Let's just do this crazy thing. And a friend of mine who's was allowing us to use her apartment, she actually had to even leave town a few days before the event. And it was like, and she said, but it's okay. Like, you can still do it there. And we just pulled off this event where we had such a loose structure too. We knew we wanted to do, okay, a cocktail hour so people could meet and mingle, then a seated meal that was plated. And yeah, I think it went pretty well for
our very first one.
Yeah, for not knowing what we were doing.
Correction, we still kind of don't know what we're doing.
Like,
but it's
still working. There's a lot to learn. We were servers at that event.
Yeah.
I would disagree. So as it's evolved, what would you say that Jane's Beard is in 2019? How would you describe it? For someone who hasn't been one and someone who's looking to it, how would you encapsulate the idea behind it?
I would say that the idea itself is like a three-hour... meal, kind of like a shared meal, whether it's, seated plated meal or a standing like plated meal. You're always going to get like a 1 hour cocktail, followed by, delicious coursed out food, great connection, with amazing people. In terms of things that evolved, staff, we are no longer the servers at the event. Cause people kept saying, well, we'd like to actually talk with you while, at this event. And it was really hard to do if we were the ones kind of carrying plates back and forth.
I think we're just a bit more organized. And so now we feel a bit more confident. When you come, we can all meet. We love introducing people to each other. We actually encourage people to come by themselves, too. So about half the people who buy tickets are single ticket buyers. So, and then people, even if they come with a friend or a date, they end up just kind of splitting ways and meeting other people. So.
We always say it's not a good date event.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Which is incredible and a great great positioning statement. Mm-hmm. How do you pick the chefs or the bartenders or your food partners?
It's a little mix of like a referral. Somebody might know a chef who, then messages us and says, hey, we want to do an event together. Or we'd like to do an event with you. We'll reach out to the chef and just say, hey, we really love, kind of what you're doing. We'd love to, this is what we do. And we'd love to kind of partner together. So it's a little bit.
We've scoured lists before. I mean, like, oh, look at this list of, hot chefs under 30 or something like that. And then we just reach out and cold email or cold DM. I guess that's our thing.
And have you found that as it's gone on that obviously people find you, but chefs, I think when we first met that you said it was sometimes hard for chefs to kind of understand what it's about, and that maybe it was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Now do you feel chefs understand it? They're really excited about it. Queer chefs are reaching out to you to say, hey, can I come cook? Or where's the current landscape of that?
Yeah, people are reaching out now, definitely. Chefs in New York and outside of New York, either asking us to do an event in their city or if they ever are in New York to do an event. So, which is, we're really honored when a chef reaches out. So, so that's, I don't know. Yeah, we still reach out, but people are reaching out to us now.
Especially chefs who maybe like have a restaurant or the executive chef at a restaurant. They're realizing that, we're not trying to be a restaurant in any way, shape or form. It's just a different format. So if they wanted to try something new or something that wasn't necessarily on their menu, that we're an audience that's receptive to that.
Right.
And have you found the younger versions of yourself who have come to you and said, I've been looking for this. I'm so happy that you started this. Have you had any of those? Oh, I'm so happy that we created this because we were looking for this when we came here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the support's been really amazing. I mean, people, after one event, people will come up and say, I had such a great time. Like, what can I do to help? And I think that I don't know. I always feel touched when someone comes up to say that.
Yeah. Or the best thing is when somebody comes to the event and says, oh, I was referred by a friend who's been to an event before.
Yeah.
That friend's not, you know, may be at the event, may not be at the event, but that type of referral to say, hey, you know, I want to tell my friend about this. That's kind of the highest honor.
Any heartwarming or good memories from past dinners?
So many.
Yeah, they're all heart. I mean,
I think one of the coolest ones in my book is when we had Kristen Kish as the guest chef when she was doing her book launch. That one to me is really special because it was a goal that we had when we first started Jane's Beard to say, you know, if there was a top, you know, five list or three list, or she was at the top of that list. And just to see kind of all the pieces kind of fall into place where it was a great opportunity and we were able to partner with her was just incredible. She was on our like 5-year plan, and to get to that, like just a little bit over a year, we were like, crap, we need a new list.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely one of the most memorable, heartwarming ones. Yeah, I mean, like, it felt like it was an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
It happened so quickly, then she was in front of us, and like we went from on the phone, and then she was in front of us, and then cooking, we ate. I mean, just happened so quickly, but that was probably one of the highlights.
You mentioned that Richmond is maybe 10 years behind in New York. Well, maybe say 7 because the internet. What advice would you give to other queer communities who are looking to start this and looking to start their own dinner parties and authentic connection series? What advice would them that, you know, some trials and tribulations that you had, or how to build it in their own cities if you can't go and do the dinners yourself?
I'd say one is just to start with, what are you actually looking for? That's kind of how we started. We just wanted to create a space that we ourselves would pay for. So just like kind of jot on, you know, kind of down on paper, what are the 5 things that you're looking for in that type of space? Does it exist? If the answer is no, then you can try to create it.
Yeah. I mean, really just start too. I mean, we did a test run with some friends and we learned a lot from just starting, you know, fumbling through the process. And, even if you're not super clear on the entire picture and you kind of have an idea and you want to do something a little bit beyond, maybe a potluck or something, like, just start, I don't know, have fun with it. You know, that's all we did. Get on the computer, put together a menu, go talk to some chefs. It's a good excuse to sit at the bar and start talking to bartenders and chefs. And
yeah. Work through some bad names. And then
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you two for both coming on the show. Where can people find you? How can they, is there any dinners announced that are coming up or mailing list announcement?
So you can find us at janesbeard.com or on Instagram at janesbeard. JanesBeard. And if you want to sign up for our mailing list, you can do so at janesbeard.com as well.
Yeah, we hope to have a Pride event, but we don't have a specific date set yet. So,
World Pride, New York City 2019.
Yeah.
So exciting.
It is like the Olympics of Pride.
Yes.
Are you ready?
No.
Yeah, I know.
Well, thank you for coming by. We're going to play another song by Grim Streaker from the archive from the 2017 radio appearance, and then they will be here live in studio to talk about their new record, No Vision.
Bye.
Today's program was brought to you by El Cortez, a colorful bi-level restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. El Cortez sports a bar on each floor, a patio for drinking zombies in the moonlight, and the capacity for just under a couple hundred revelers. New York Magazine's Chris Crowley profiled El Cortez, saying its owners aren't trying to mine Mexican restaurants of any era, but just mesh together a bunch of things that they like. The menu focuses on what they call all three Mexicans: hot plate, gringo, and Mexican-Mexican. There's no fried chicken queso or chili con carne, but mission-style burritos, loaded all-American tacos, and a chimichanga. There's also a cheeseburger, because who cares? Cocktails lean heavily in the direction of tiki and the kind of lowbrow drinks that caused the mixology revolution. Classic drinks your grandparents definitely drank, like the pina colada and rum punch, made with quality ingredients and a whole bunch of trial and error. Visit El Cortez at 17 Ingraham Street in Bushwick or online at elcortezbushwick.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Sari Kamen.
And I'm Leah Kurtz. And together we host Food Without Borders here on HRN.
Immigrants make our food system vibrant, diverse, and delicious.
Each week, we invite a guest to talk about how food connects them to their past as we explore what it's like to be an immigrant in the U.S. today.
You can find Food Without Borders wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back. Grim Straker, so good to see you again.
Hey, thanks for having us.
You
too. Yeah. We're just going to do an all Grim Straker episode because we can. Yeah. And it's awesome. Great. New record coming out. Very excited. But before we do that, how's the last 2 years been since we've last seen you?
So much fun.
It's been 2017. Maybe it was a year and a half.
Seriously? Holy shit.
Something like that. We'll say a year and a half. Longer than a year.
I feel a lot older.
Yeah, surprisingly, no big blow-ups or fights.
Yeah, you're still a band.
Still here.
Yeah. I was like, I hope it's the same five people that when you were doing soundcheck, I was like, man, I hope it's not like a new person. I was like, hey, good to see you. Like, no, I'm new. Like, oh, that's, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I'm Bill 2.0.
Yeah. That's amazing. Any secrets to keeping it together for 2 years?
Pizza.
I think it's the pizza. It's all the pizza. I don't know.
I think that you might be the band that plays the most shows that I have seen. I mean, at least hardest working. When did you find time to write a record?
I don't know. we wrote it. I mean, I write a lot of stuff just like in the mornings or in like free time to come up with ideas. But I think we just powered through it in like 3 months or so. And then we actually recorded this record over a year ago.
Yeah.
And now we're finally putting it out, which is like, maybe that's like the secret to staying together, is that we all have a requirement to wait around for this record to come out.
The anticipation.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I mean, I know a group that wrote a record, finished it, mixed, mastered, PR, and then the lead person quit the month before the record came out. And it was like, wait, no, it's like all the hard work. Well, not to say the
player. You weren't supposed to say anything, Greg.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Well, this is where the band breaks up. Yeah, that was the plan. And that band is Grim Streaker. Yeah. I'm so sorry. But it was like one of those things that was like, it's like, just stick around for the reward.
Yeah, it is.
What, mind me asking, because I'm sure it's everyone, what took so long? Why a year?
I think it definitely takes some time. I mean, I think we won money.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, we only scrounged up enough cash to record the thing and mix it. And then...
But not master.
You
know,
but then you got to master it. You got to have PR. When you're
Huge
going
thing.
Through the self-releasing-ish process, there's a lot more components to it. And I think then there's also...
We wanted to like, have a physical product. We wanted to be able to make cassettes or, you know.
And we're playing around with, could we do vinyl? Is it worth it? A lot of just like over obsession also on just like creative aspects of it. I spend probably way too long working on artwork and like concept stuff.
Yeah.
But now that it's done, was it worth the wait?
I think so.
Yeah. I think so, because also, like, during the wait, like, we wrote a lot more, so we've got a bunch of new stuff just ready to record. Like, we're ready to go for the next chapter, which is really good. Because I don't think we wouldn't have held on had we not had this thing kind of waiting to be released. And we just got so bored in the meantime that we were like, we gotta write more.
And play shows.
And play a lot.
Yeah, play shows. And, like,
so do you feel excited to play these songs, even though they've been in your canon for over a year now?
Always.
Yeah. And actually, the response to the singles has been surprisingly awesome.
What has been the response?
Just really positive. Like, Sensitive Demon is our newest one, and we all were like, oh, maybe that's like a later track on the record, and everyone's really excited about it. So it gives us energy to, like, a new perspective on it.
Can we hear a song?
Yo!
What are you going to play first?
Let's play that one.
Sensitive Demon!
We're doing that now? Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, yeah, why wait? Sorry. All right, here we go. Grimstreaker live on Snacky Tunes. What's the story behind that song?
Well, that song was inspired by I noticed I would often enter my local coffee shop hungover, looking like complete shit, with no makeup on. But other days I would go in looking very dressed up and, like, ready to do something with the day. And I realized that the person who was serving me the coffee had seen me in both ways and in other ways, like when I came back from the gym or, like, whatever I was doing. He just saw me basically through everything I was doing throughout the day, every day. Because I go to get coffee like 2-3 times a day. And I thought that was kind of hot that, you know, like, we could still flirt. And it's basically like a fantasy I have about, like, hooking up with my barista. And that's not just one barista, like, it's been many.
They knew the real you.
They know me.
They knew you more intimately.
They know me.
No facade.
No.
Completely vulnerable.
Yeah, 100%.
Are you the sensitive demon?
The sensitive demon. It's both of us as one, as one entity. We are the sensitive demon. Together as one.
You have a record release show coming up at Alphaville, which I absolutely adore. What is the advice for putting together a bill for an opening show?
I think a lot of it is like have people on there. Like we thought about the bill very carefully, and we deliberated between like a bunch of different bands, and there were so many that if we could, we would have had on the bill. But we've also been on a lot of the people that we care about's bills too. So we were like, hey, we should change up like a little bit
for their record releases. Did you feel obligated? Like, shoot, like we were on theirs, they got to be on ours.
Well, like we sure. Not obligated, but we were also just like, we would love to have them on, but at the same time, like maybe it's a little too soon, or like, you know, we should probably switch it up. And it doesn't mean we respect them any less. Like, if we could, we would have 15 of our friends' bands on the bill, and that would be amazing. What we thought about this time was people, obviously, that we respect, and also that were friends of ours. And
and our friends from Philadelphia, too. Cold friends.
Yeah, our friends from Philly, Cold friends, who are, you know, Craig, the lead singer, just moved to Brooklyn, and I'm just stoked to have him on the bill. It's just like a part of, like, you know, the New York community. Like,
I think it's like it's a celebration, and we want friends and so-called family of our, you know, neighborhood there, but also like something that's like cohesive, and like people will come, and like if they come for the first band and stay through
they'll
the whole
stay for
thing,
the last.
They'll be really excited to see like the whole energy throughout.
We also kind of thought about, like, you know, like the kind of music that people would stay, exactly what Dan said, like would stay for the first and stay for the last, because they're just bands that kind of blend like in a good way together. Not all very similar, like they're not all the same, but there's like there's similarities, and it's it's just an overall like sound that gets people stoked to hear one and then the other.
And each band is part of our history as a band too, right? Like Cold Fronts, we've played with out of town. Big Bliss is like homies forever.
Pretty much our best friends as a band.
And we did like the best loft show that we've ever had at
the,
their loft.
The Donald Trump Pinata.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then Flexi, the singer Brendan, he's in B-Boys, and I've definitely known him for a long time. And one of our first show at Alphaville was playing with B-Boys and opening for them. So it's kind of like a full circle thing for us.
Did you have to write anyone and be like, we're so sorry, there's no room? Did you have to do any of those?
A little bit, when we asked too many people.
Or did you ask someone and have to then uninvite them?
Well, no, kind it's just of. Scheduling. But all the band schedules are all, you know, all over the place. So we should have just done a festival.
Grim Shrieker Fest.
Next time.
Demon Fest.
Can we hear another song?
Of course.
What's this one?
Let's do ADD.
Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully your bass drum won't fall onto my tuner. I'll try to do it.
We'll be right back.
On the eve of your debut, what are you feeling? What are you most excited about and what are you most nervous about?
Honestly, just so excited to just like do the show and have a bunch of friends in the audience. I just like being around people and that I love, and I know that they're gonna show up because it's just they're amazing people, and I'm very excited for that more than anything else, to be honest. I mean, we're gonna put the record out into the world. I don't know how it's gonna be received or what. All I care about is that just like show that we're gonna do to like celebrate that we made a thing together, and that we can just be with friends that night.
Yeah, and then next chapter.
Yeah, yeah. I think we're really ready for to do the next thing, too.
What is the next thing? To the best of your ability that you can see, based on James Beard's advice where you just got to get started, which I think is wonderful New York advice, like some of the best, like just who fucking cares. What is like the vagueness of the next chapter for Grim Streaker?
I mean, I'd say in the short term, it's play some shows out of town, tour in like October, and then after that, kind of reinvent ourselves and work on the next thing that's, you know, even more thoughtful and, like, hopefully something that's, like, we consider
the next the next sound isn't the same. Like, it's not the same. Yeah. But it has
still us.
Notes of us, but it's a different chapter for sure.
What is the through line that you see? Like, what is the intangible that comes into the next chapter of Grim Streaker?
I don't know. As long as we keep getting excited about the songs, we keep writing them.
Yeah.
I'd say it's just trying to, like, push the boundaries of, like, what's considered punk and post-punk, but still, like, something that challenges us as musicians. I think there's a point where you get comfortable with playing at a certain level and that becomes boring or it creates apathy. And how can you like push yourself to create something inventive and kind of challenging that still like fits within the mold of like what your kind of like original mission was,
like
intent was that you set out and that people like.
Yeah, it goes for both instrumental and also lyrics. Like, I'm definitely sitting down a lot more with like what I'm writing lyrically and thinking about things a lot more, because exactly what Dan said, like,
yeah, and then just like us being inspired by like other things along the way that like we're trying to like incorporate, like our good friend Ian, who's in a band in Monograms, worked on this documentary about the band Brainiac from the 90s, and we went and saw like the film premiere like in Austin for South By, and there was a portion of it that we were all watching together that was really about like the writing process and how like Tim the singer would basically like, if everyone liked the song that they were writing, he thought that was like, oh, that's too likable, like let's totally destroy the thing and make it really like weird. And I don't know, like watching that movie, I think we all came out of that and we're like, it was just like a short influence on us that was like, oh, let's like think about things in that way. And it's about like how you think when you're creating new music.
Yeah, because I mean, there's like some things that Dan will come up with now that I'm like, that does not sound pleasing to my ears, but I actually really respect that, and that's actually cool. Like, I like that, but I don't really like that, but I like the way that sounds in a way. Like, that's good. Like, let's do that. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like, we're trying to, like, I don't know, whenever we come up with something, it's in, like, 4/4 timing, trying to, like, break it out of that timing, or, like, change tempos up and down, or, like, just really try things that, like, push the limits, even if they're like a pain in the ass to actually do.
Yeah, so basically make songs that we can't play live.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that's, you know, those are all reaches, right? Eventually, one day you will, or you can just, you know, be loud enough with enough distortion. It'll be, no one will know.
Well, my thought is, I think the joke I made before is like, if we make them more complex, like, since we're kind of, we're getting kind of old, like, That way it'll keep us from drinking a lot and we'll be healthier in the long run.
We have to be sober.
I
appreciate it. Your body appreciates it. Your liver thanks you. I'd be remiss to ask, what are the upcoming shows? Hardest touring band in Brooklyn. Where are you playing this summer? Where are you playing next week? Outside of that, I feel like you would do a record release show and then you'd play the next night.
That was the old Grim Trigger.
Yeah.
We're playing Jimmy Soprano's birthday.
Oh, that's true. No, we're actually, June is like all out of town shows, which will be really fun. New Jersey, the Meat Locker, which is like an epic DIY space, like CBGB-esque hole.
Sounds perfect.
And then
With Native Son,
our
and
buddies.
And Smock, our other buddies.
Yep. And then that's the 7th of June, 8th in New Haven for our good friend Jimmy Soprano's birthday.
Yep. Big 4-0.
Yeah. And then the 22nd of June in Boston with an awesome lineup that our drummer Pial put together. Jim Shorts, Twen. Is that how you say it? Twen? Yeah. It's going to be great.
Great. Well, good to see all of you again, and that's the same five of you and not some awkward replacement. Congratulations on the record coming out. It will be out May 17th. No vision. I'm very excited. Thank you to James Beard for coming by, and we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What are you going to take us out with?
Cat call,
of course. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Get out of my way, get out of my way, get out of my way.
talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.